So recording has started. So this is a OEM board meeting, Wednesday, September 13th, currently 6:10 Pacific time. First item is going to be a roll call, and I'll just go through the call here. So Brady is here, Roberto. So I know he's here, but we'll skip and go back. Okay, perfect. Senna?
Yep, I'm here. Thank you.
Lou?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Steven?
Here.
Robert?
Here.
Matthew?
Here.
Jit? He was here. He's just on, so we'll say yes. And then Sherwin?
Here.
And then we also have guest John Williams. Then we'll move on to the next item, which is the financial report.
Thanks, Brady. I did the usual. I uploaded the report, and the only thing I noted, like I stated on the form, was that the first contingency is
I think you may have, I think your signal went out. Are you still there?
Who are you looking for?
Steven. He was talking and then, he got blocked up, but you know, hopefully he'll come back. But so he posted a financial report on the forum thread. Not much happened. There was basically $1,000 that was paid to Jerry for his work, and it looks like $40 in donations for the month. So we'll move on to the next item, unfinished business. We'll probably wait on the revocation status until Stephen comes back into the call. So we'll go to the next item, which was basically just announcing that so OEMR sponsored Jerry, gave him $2,000 basically to get institutional billing into OpenEMR, which is basically finished, and that's in the project now. So that's a pretty big deal, meaning that basically inpatient facilities can bill, and also especially the hybrid, the sort of the long-term placement in the hybrid inpatient outpatient facilities can now use billing in OpenEMR.
Hey Brady, this is Lou. Does that mean that ambulatory surgical centers, does that include those?
I'm not a billing expert, maybe someone else, but it should. It should. I don't think there are any gaps at this point. If you can, because basically that means we're doing, you know, the standard, I forgot the names, but I think everything's covered at this point. Does anyone else, does any billing experts, anything to add on that?
Hey, sorry about that. I got disconnected. It's pretty spotty cell phone coverage here.
Yeah, just so you know, I finished the financial report and I just announced Jerry's project, but I figured when you came back, you could go through revocation.
My ears so always perk up when I hear a billing expert.
Bill, you know, there was one question. so the question was basically, now that we have institutional, does that cover the outpatient surgical places?
Yeah, the ambulatory surgical centers that are getting very big in orthopedics. This is Lou speaking, by the way.
Well, I guess to refer that to Jerry. I mean, I assume he's got it all now. So.
Yeah, and then the other weird ones are the long-term care, the skilled nursing facilities that use a system called OASIS. They would be another kind of wacky one.
Yeah, as far as I know, I mean, there's only inpatient and outpatient billing. So if that doesn't cover it, then you know, we're going to have to go find that and be that to Jerry, too.
Okay.
So the next, and then if you're, while you're still connected, the next item will be revocation status.
Okay, yeah. And we it's got to a point where we're starting to hear from some experts. It's been a really nice week through Matthew's contact at OSI, this guy Patrick Mason or Mason, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. He fed us a bunch of names, and I talked to a couple people, and my general take on it is that it's going to be a big uphill battle to get 501c3 at this point, especially the way we operate, like people who have companies that are on the board that, you know, although we have a code of conduct, it's a fuzzy line, I think. And so the last group that did that was the open source election voting group. It took 7 years. They had to totally review the whole board. And so I just, you know, I think at this point, it's just the writing's on the wall. It's time to get out now and seek some other solution. I mentioned to Brady that the 501c6 is a pretty popular designation that works for our community, I think. So it's something to explore. That'd be my number one bet. But there's also, you know, starting over from scratch, which we've been talked about. But the other thing is that we will have to vote on withdrawing our reinstatement application because the IRS is trying to set up a meeting right now, a phone conference. And so we have to get back to them, and we can do the vote, you know, by email. I don't think I think too much tonight to kind of throw it all at everybody. I'm traveling, so I won't probably be able to participate at a certain point. But something we can talk down the road. I can mention to the IRS guy that, you know, maybe we need a little more time because there's more information to kind of come to our attention, too. I hope that they would understand if we waited faster than to reach out to us. That's pretty much it.
Stephen, was there any comment by the people you were speaking with about the couple of those foundations we found?
Any,
like the Django Foundation, which basically exists solely to support an open source software project? I sent you over a couple of links.
Yeah, like I was saying, I think I know I'm speaking pretty quickly, but we would have to totally redo our board. You wouldn't want board members who have a business, you know, that's pursuing the same common product, from what I can understand.
Okay, so I was a little unsure about how.
Yeah, about we got in as a C3. It seems like there was a lot of focus in the ensuing years, and it really narrowed this down. So if anyone that got in, you know, that has been paying for the hero to keep it, it would be good. But, you know, we were unlucky, I guess. Because now it's like, you know, with an open source name, you just don't even want to mention that. From what I can understand, it's an immediate red flag. And so there's a lot of scrutiny on it.
Yeah, I think
hey, Stephen, this is Matthew here.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just have a really quick question. This is Matthew here. If we were to run with a 501c6, which I'm not familiar with, would we still be eligible for grants if we were to, you know, write them and get them?
I have limited knowledge of all of that, but I mean, I'm pretty sure, no, we wouldn't be able to get those big grants from the groups that like to give 501c3s for tax purposes.
It's tax exempt, though, isn't it? A 503c6 or?
It's tax exempt, so we wouldn't pay income tax, but it's not tax exempt for those donations that would come from a foundation or another 501c3 or, you know, I guess.
Yeah, this is Lou speaking. It used to be in the old days, 501c3 was the only way to go for grants, there was no exceptions. Then they started to loosen, and you 501c6s and 4s were starting to be able to get them. And then they loosened even more, where now they're even – so it depends on the grant. You could even, as a for-profit, you could be a regular company and apply for certain grants. So it's not like it used to be where it's just one blanket is you're either IRS tax exempt or not, and it has to be C3. It's changed a lot. Over the last 5 years, it's changed drastically.
Do we know what the IRS, what their agenda for this meeting is? specifically?
No, I think probably just about next steps. We haven't got that part. We played phone tag and asked them to send me an email, but I think they don't really do that. I had to call and say he's looking at 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks of October, he's got time, set up something. And I just feel like, you know, we're at that point, I don't think you want to go in there without any legal counsel, and it's going to be really cost prohibitive if we take the next step with the group we have. I mean, you know, part of me wants to fight for it. It's like, I guess maybe that's my nature or something. I just feel like from some of the advice we got, and I took some notes. I guess it's a little difficult trying to become the legal expert as the treasurer. I think that's one of the problems, is trying to cut through all this. But I just get the general sense that this is really a risk in the open source community right now as well. And it's just going to be a long, hard battle. I don't think I'm into that. Try to do that, to fight for it for 7 years, because whatever. I think we have a core people who are interested, and if we could form as another 501c, that we could work with that and still be autonomous. And it seems like I'll share the information. I think kind of ran out of place, but it seems really fit our community better. And I like going with something that's kind of out there, tried and true. You know, maybe we overachieved with the first designation, and it's been rightfully corrected in a way.
Yeah, you know, and I think OMR, I think, was lucky to get it at the time they got it. It was right when things were getting tough. But I think anyone who has it now, essentially, it's like they've been grandfathered in. I mean, they just had it. But they are even going after people that have active ones that don't even, you know, they at some point they're going to probably start going after the Django or the ones that you saw. So I think there's a shift happening in terms of that. I mean, one option is just to start, is for somebody, you know, to start another organization that is focused on education, nonprofit, underserved areas, just with that, and not even thinking about software. You know, I guess that's one option too, is to think about something like that, which would be a lot less expensive.
And this is Robert, that's something I've been considering for several months now, so I've kind of wanted to see how this goes. Sounds like we have some more research to do, it sounds. Nothing like reading up on tax codes for nonprofits, right?
Yeah, I think the big question is whether we think C6 would be worthwhile. It does look like, it's not like, you know, you're not going to get those people that are going to donate, and you know, because it's not tax exempt in donations, but if it at least if it opens doors for grants or allowing us to partner with other groups, like, you know, I kind of wonder if boot camp takes, you know, they won't even talk to you as a mentoring project unless you have tax, you know, C3. So I wonder what they would think about C6. Those kinds of things.
I mean, could you put a question mark, like 501c question mark, as just a magic word?
50 what?
Yeah, this is Lou. I could be really wrong about this, but from my memory recollection is that anything that's a 501c anything is tax exempt. The difference is how you raise your money. When I first dug into this, because we used to be nonprofit ourselves, Suncoast Rio, and we switched over. But my recollection is that a C3 had to raise 70% of its money through donations and you know, selling, you know, like the Girl Scouts, they sell their cookies and you know, the United Way and things like that. But you could have like the Kiwanis, people who donate to Kiwanis, which is C6, or I always get C6 and C4 confused, but there are tax exempt organizations that they just have different structures on how they get their tax-exempt donations, and there's different amounts that could be taken off the donor's tax returns. So I don't think it's a matter of anything that's the whole chapter in the IRS, the whole 501 chapter, subchapter C, is about tax exemption. So, you know, it's pretty easy to look it up. But I think they all, it's a matter of how you raise your money, not so much as to whether you are or not tax exempt.
You know, I'm just reading as we're talking. It looks kind of interesting. It looks like some organizations will actually create a C6, and then they'll create a related C3. So another option is we could have OEMR be a C6, and then we do create the C3 with the focus of education, underserved areas, those kinds of things. And it looks like that would be the one that could take the donations. I mean, it looks like there's, I think we need to research this more.
Maybe Stephen, or I don't know if you want to, maybe me, Brady, and Lou, we just want to kind of read up on that chapter of the tax code and see if we can find any examples of other companies and reach out to anybody we may know and just come back with something for next meeting.
Yes. I have an accountant friend who used to be a CPA. He retired, and his specialty was nonprofits. Maybe I could, if you want, you know, think about this. I don't want to hit everybody with a surprise, but if you want, I can maybe ask him to do a 15-minute on-call presentation if you want, or either that, or I could just talk with him and make notes and report to the board, whatever way you want.
Maybe we just do like a quick 15-minute call with him and lay out where we're at and see if he has any recommendations. He'd be willing to at least give us the 15 minutes pro bono.
Yeah, he would.
Evaluation.
I could talk to him if the board agrees. Yeah, let me know. Yeah.
I
think it's a good idea.
To him.
Yeah, and then just let us know, and we'll whoever can try to make it will make it. I definitely want to be there too if I can. And I guess Stephen will just focus on delaying IRS. I don't know. We could let them know. I mean, we are. We're honestly collecting. We're doing research, and we're gonna vote on it at the next board meeting about what strategy we want to take. I agree with Stephen. I hate to go into that meeting just to find out what's going on and find out it's like our last. You know, we don't have a lawyer there. We don't know what we're doing, and they say a bunch of things we don't understand. And then
that's
the phone hangs up,
like,
and
it's
over.
They've already made their decision. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. I'm just, you know, they've already sent us a letter. We have to come up with some reason why we're so special. You know, yes, that's great, Lou. You know, you talk to somebody. I mean, it seems like pro bono, 20 minutes, you can get away with that. That's what was really kind of nice about this week, was talking to some legal experts.
Okay, well, I'll be meeting with him Monday. You know, like I said, he's a friend of mine, so we get together for coffee all the time, and I'll just bring this up.
Any other questions on revocation?
I will tell you that, by the way, this is Lou again. If the board does decide to have him speak, he's a little brash. He tends to, like, instead of just saying his position, he'll yell it. Because he really is very passionate about counting, believe it or not. So, so just forewarned.
He probably has to do that about taxes, or else people just kind of fall asleep.
Yeah.
So we'll move on. Nothing else to add for revocation. So we'll move on to. And again, these other ones are more, you know, the next item is marketing. If anyone has anything to add on marketing.
This is Matthew. Got some exciting news on the marketing front. As you all know, we had our press release for the OpenEMR Cloud that was released in our latest patch. And it seemed to be well received. We have some happy users and some feedback so far. And there's a team that's swarming on putting together a non-HIPAA-friendly version that's cheap, basically. We put together was, you know, about $150, $250 a month. and for the user that is, and it's just going to be too much for low resource users. So we're working on what we're calling OpenEMR Cloud Lite, and there will be another press done, and Robert has gracefully helped me start with the press release that we'll probably be sending to Roger and the like. So yeah, very exciting stuff. Again, if you didn't know, OpenEMR Cloud is a HIPAA-friendly, highly secure, highly available cloud solution using Amazon, and then that's what we ship.
That's great. Congratulations. That's I think, really going to be take the market by storm. I think that's great. So this means that doctors don't have to download OpenEMR to their, or they could do both, right? So I'm assuming that what we're doing is that doctors don't need to download, they could just be hosted, and they'll go on this OpenEMR cloud, and they'll pay the $150 a month, and that'll be it? Or do they still have to download all the various tools on their laptop, on their personal computers? Or maybe I should just look for the press release.
No, that's a great question. So there is a little bit of a catch. They have to have a little bit of technical knowledge, as with most things, or an IT department that will set it up. So it is a little complex, but the good news is the next version is going to be literally less than 10 minutes to click a few buttons, enter a credit card, and you'll be ready to go. We, OEMR, are not hosting anything. Like, we're not going to be the multi-tenant host. They have to set it up on their own, so that they can sign a BAA with AWS independent of us. And that's designed to keep us out of any sort of legal issues. But yeah, the next version is going to be a little more user-friendly, but it's going to be less powerful. It's meant to be used in a non-HIPAA environment. They're trying to save money. You know, we're aiming $5-$10 a month there. And that might be the de facto way to install it outside of the US. But yeah, to answer your question, you know, no setup needed in your facility, except for anything with labs or integrations, you'll have to actually, you know, set it up yourself.
And it would still be a certified product, right? Even if they go with the HIPAA Lite or the no HIPAA?
Yeah, I think we just have to be careful with the certified word, but essentially, you know, we want it to be clear that, you know, we want to try to word it in a way that doesn't encourage, you know, diagnostic use. But Robert has been helping me with that. We don't want to get ourselves in trouble with Amazon. But, you know, we basically, at the end of the day, we want to encourage the use of the OpenEMR Cloud, which is that fully available HIPAA-compliant version. But, you know, if they can't afford it, then there's this other option. We have to be careful with the wording because it's not HIPAA-compliant.
Yeah, I agree.
Lou, this is Robert. I think, Lou, maybe I can answer your question. We're looking at the wording. We think it's HIPAA-friendly and would meet the regulations, but it would still be considered a meaningful use to certified product.
Right.
That part stays. It's the HIPAA part that the Lite version may not comply with, but for the providers inside the U.S., they can pay that $150 a month, be fully HIPAA-friendly, meet those regulations, and all of OpenEMR in general is meaningful use to certified. I think that's probably what you were hinting at. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right. Also, you know, not to be forgotten, the HIPAA compliance is a provider responsibility. You know, even though the hosting organization does, you know, have certain things that they agree to do to be HIPAA compliant, it's not like. The burden really is the provider to make sure that they, you know, they have a good good policies and procedures for destroying data and retention and you know, all the announcements and breach notification. So yeah, we'll talk more tomorrow about it because it is a very fascinating area. So good, thank you.
Sounds good.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. This is Matthew. Thanks, Robert. You picked up on the question better than I did. Yeah, I didn't realize you were talking about MU, but yeah, that's the correct answer. But yeah, anyway, go ahead and read the press release. It's really exciting stuff, and, you know, it's great marketing for us. We actually, you know, have some users, which is really nice. So, yeah, more on that next board meeting for sure.
Any more marketing items? So, next item is conference outreach. I'll just bring up one. I'm sure Robert may want to bring up something too. But so, Dr. Joyce Boyd is actually talking tomorrow at the National Doctors of Nursing Practice Conference in New Orleans, with the title, her talk is actually titled Customizing an Open Source Electronic Health Record System, which is basically based on OPDMR. So that's pretty cool. If anyone's in New Orleans, I can let them know where it is, but obviously you'd probably have to sign up for the conference. And that was, OMR did pay for her. We paid for her registration for this also. So we sponsored her to be able to go.
Brady, this is Sena. Any update on the billing conference in, I think that's going to be in Las Vegas next month.
I think there was discussion on that. I don't know who discussed whether it was whether it made sense. I don't know if Lou brought,
Well, I had experience with that ARMA. There's two billing associations, and from a quality reporting standpoint, the ARMA one is the one where I'm not sure which one's bigger, but I know that they focus on practice management, and they're not that interested in quality reporting. Whereas the other one, which name I forget, is the one that is very big on quality reporting. And so the way to find out the one that gets the bigger attendance would be to look up Dr. Dan Mingle, who is my competition, and he runs Mingle Analytics. And the board that he's on is the one that has got the higher attendance.
If you all think it is worthwhile to attend, I don't mind, but it may be too late already to set up a booth or anything. But if anyone has any insight or views, I'd like to know.
They have a great website. If you go to their website, it's a husband and wife team. And if you go to their website, they have a lot of good information there. And they always answer the phone. So if you call, you'll probably get either the wife or the husband, and they all spend a good 15 minutes with you on any questions you have. So you might want to do that, Sena, or have some one of your people do it or something.
No, this is the, I don't know, I'd be talking about the same thing. I'm talking about the one of the largest billing association. I think it is called the American Billing Billers Association or Billing Association. There are a lot of Cario and all these people are putting up a booth in Las Vegas. So I don't know whether there is any specialty in open source or anyone contacted Brady. So it may be a good opportunity for us to put the OpenEMR name on the billing side of the house. So anyway, I can find something and send a mail probably.
Yeah, definitely. I guess it depends on how much it costs to enter and all that other kind of stuff.
I'm not, whatever cost I think I'm going to observe. That's not a problem. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to drive. So cost is not an issue for me. But the question is whether it is worthwhile to go. Is there anything we can do, some bigger impact over there with OpenEMR? That's the only thing.
We have institutional billing, so that's always a plus.
Right.
If I'm thinking of the right organization, then their main thing is they're selling products to help people become certified coders. And so a lot of their emphasis is on education. So the people who go, so that's why I want to double check that I've got the right people. I think they're based in Colorado, but they always have their conference in Las Vegas. And like I said, it's a married couple, and they've done very well in membership. And they have a very good website, very informative.
So this is Matthew. Just wanted to mention for conference outreach, and I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, but Andre and I applied for Wonka SAR. It stands for the Southeast Asian, Southeast. Oh my gosh, I cannot speak. Southeast Asia region of the Wonka Conference, which is going to be hosted by GPAN, and those are the general practitioners. We have heard back from the conference professors. They really like our abstract, so hopefully we'll get accepted. And I'm thinking that it involves some sort of, you know, talk or something of that nature, so we'll find out. But obviously we're going to be using OpenEMR as the instrument there, and the focus is really on how we can set it up in a clinic, you know, from paper to electronic, as well as interoperability and some advanced stuff with machine learning that we're doing with the CTakes project. But yeah, that's a conference that will be in November should we get accepted. And yeah, cross your fingers.
That's great. Any other conference outreach?
Hey, Brady, is my thing under conference outreach?
Well, we put you under new business, that hackathon.
Yeah.
You want to talk about it? We can do a new business if you want. Sure. Or if you want to talk about, you know, we'll move on. We'll do that at new business.
Sounds good.
So next item is raising funds. I just always put this on there. Our donations are pretty, they were pretty minimal this month. It's hit or miss. We sometimes have a good month and then not a great month. So always taking ideas for how to get more funds. If anybody has any.
This is Stephen. One of the things about raising funds for the 501c6, it's more of a company dues structure. And so we kind of have a board that's made out of different companies, and everyone would pay like something that's substantial and it's not just a token. And that would be one source of revenue. It doesn't have to be the only, which is great. And I just wanted to mention that because I did learn a little bit about that.
Well, I know one of them is like the Kiwanis, is like, or the Rotaries. They're like a membership one, which is another one to consider too, if people want to be members.
So it sounds like more stuff to think about. I think someone brought up, I forgot who brought up Kickstarter or something like that. But
this is Lou again, I'm sorry. Reason I'm so talkative on these things is because I just did a real deep dive on these about 3 months ago. You could raise money. Okay, the history of raising money is basically that you went in front of people with money, investors, and you had a private company and you begged them for money and you had a business plan, right? So that was the traditional way. And then, believe it or not, this lady from Chase, who just thought that was too hard to do, decided to get involved with something. She started something called Indiegogo, which is very much like Kickstarter. So, but Indiegogo, you could actually raise money for a product, and people can contribute to it, and you could be a nonprofit or a for-profit. And actually, my company is a sponsor of the Indiegogo services. So that's yet another area where we could raise money, is through the pathway of venture capital, but going to the community instead of going to, you know, a room full of very rich people who want to take over your company in 3 years. So Indiegogo is another one, and Kickstarter is another one.
Just as a point of reference, sites like Indiegogo and Kickstarter are generally known as crowdfunding, because you're essentially moving away from a handful of investors to a large group of crowds doing small donations to raise a significant amount of money. So that's generally the term that I've always heard applied to those types of websites.
Okay, so this is Matthew here. Just awesome this is being discussed. I think I sent an email to Brady and Roberts, a couple weeks ago, and I was thinking we have this new OpenEMR project roadmap that lists out all the awesome things we want to get done in the next few years, PACs, and C he takes, all that good stuff. And I was thinking, you know, it would be really cool to raise a Kickstarter fund just for these projects, maybe individually or all as a group. And I thought it would be best, though, if we had a video that really had an inspirational message and we had our users like, you know, Dr. Millay and maybe even Sherwin talking about technical implementations of it on sites. And that might help kind of drive the interest for that. So, you know, we would probably want to put, you know, a good number up there, like 50,000, 100,000, 200,000, you know, just something to think about. I know Robert did mention that they take some of the money, so we have to consider that. I'm not sure if Indiegogo takes less than Kickstarter or if there's other caveats, but, you know, let's just all start to think about this because, you know, maybe we can pick some of these roadmap projects to really serve as a reference point for fundraising.
And, you know, you could even tie it, you know, just to decrease your work or whoever's doing this, you could always tie it into the work that's done with press releases, all those kinds of things. You know, just
and just to specify, the reason why I'm like keen on putting it on a project level is because it's much more easy to say like, oh, we want system and open EMR. So it's very specific, not, oh, we just want to have a bunch of money for whatever we want to work on. You know, it would be kind of telling a story.
Well, you know, the ones I know of, this is Lou, the ones I know of, like Indiegogo, which is the one I really dug into, is instead of giving product, you're giving perks. So people who donate, they not only get a say, and they could ask a lot of questions, and they could help, you know, they could be influential, and in, if you want them to be influential in the company's direction, but they also get, like, little perks. So they'll get pre-releases, or they'll get, I don't know, little hats that say Open EMR on them or umbrellas. And they get these little perks. And
just
the
like
perks, at certain levels, they'll get, yeah, that's what they get instead of the product.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Lou. You cut off a little bit. But I heard what you said, perks.
Yeah.
Maybe we can just have a file that gets shipped with the software that lists them out specifically as, you know, VIP contributors. Something maybe that would help.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I've seen those. Definitely.
Any other raising funds? So next item is conflict of interest policy, which we're slowly making our way towards, I think.
This is Robert. It was on my to-do list towards the end of last week. I wanted to have all of that ironed out so we could make some headway during this meeting. Obviously, there was a hurricane. I was a little preoccupied. So by the next board meeting, I will have either contacted you if you haven't signed it or, I'll have reached out to get everything signed. So hopefully by the October meeting, all of our conflict of interest policy statements have been signed and taken care of. But sorry, I couldn't get to it this time around.
Sounds good. And then trademarking, probably I think the same issue. That's still an ongoing thing that we're working on.
I was having a conversation with Stephen about that the same time about the conflict of interest stuff, and you know.
And the logo is kind of evolving anyway, so it's kind of good that we're kind of, I think your logo is kind of evolving a little bit, so it's kind of good to wait a little bit anyway.
Yeah, we're making minor changes to just solidify some of the things. Nothing major.
Well, CMS knows about you guys, knows very well, because I'm on these quality calls, and they wanted to know, I was telling Robert, they wanted to know about Open EMR, because we're going to use it for what Suncoast Rio does. And they all logged in at once. So it's a great site. So CMS, the government knows about us. I can tell you that, the quality people.
They logged in. The website.
Yeah, the website. I didn't say log. Sorry, I meant they looked at the website.
Oh, very cool.
Very high level of interest with CMS.
And then join OSI. That's ongoing. That's a work in progress. Next section, new business. I don't think Daniel's on, so we'll push that to the, I'll give him an email and see whether he wants to still join. Then the next item is the VCU Hackathon sponsorship. I'll let Robert take the stage.
A few weeks ago, during the weekly conference call for developers, a gentleman named Brandon spoke up. He is co-leading a medical hackathon at Virginia Commonwealth University. Basically, the medical students, engineering students, computer science guys all get together and spend 24 or 48 hours, basically, a weekend developing. They're assigned a challenge, and then they are tasked with accomplishing that challenge. It's all medically related, and so I asked for a couple of ideas and if they fit into that category. And he loved the two ideas, or the three. Basically, very similar to what Matthew was working on, a open source, low cost glucometer to check a patient's blood sugar. Same concept for vital signs machine to monitor your pulse, oxygen status, respirations maybe, and blood pressure. And lastly, a third device which would do EKG. So it would monitor your heart rhythm. You get feedback about some of the technical electrical firings of your heart. All three devices would be low cost, fully open source, hopefully driven by something like a Raspberry Pi, which is super cheap and very affordable, even for low resource clinics in the developing world. He loved them. He said that those were great challenges. So I would hope that we could, you get to enter a challenge if you sponsor it. There's four sponsorships, and unfortunately I don't have the internet in Orlando right now, so I can't pull it up. But I believe, and Brady, it's in the chat somewhere, Brady, I believe it was like $1,200 basically is for the lowest sponsorship. Yeah. It was about $1,200, which gives us the ability to have a create a challenge. I reached out to a couple other people to try to get the other challenges filled, and I'm still working on that. But I figured OpenEMR could definitely spend $1,200 to get that one of those three devices, whichever one we feel is most beneficial or most realistic. Get that in. You get a few other things being a sponsor. You know, your name is in the program, a couple other things. I don't even know. The big thing is the challenge that you get to make. So I feel like it's a really good opportunity to kind of continue pushing that low resource work that, that I'm super passionate about. It seems like Matthew's really kind of jumped on board. They've been doing a lot of work. Additionally, I would love to go up there. I believe it's in November. I would love to go up for the weekend and represent OpenEMR and the community and OEMR. And they allow that. You can send a representative over if you're a sponsor. And I'm in Orlando, so a trip up to Virginia shouldn't be super expensive. And, you know, I don't need the Ritz. I would find, you know, a cheap flight there and back and a cheap hotel to stay in if the board would be willing to compensate my travels. I don't need you guys to even compensate my meals or anything, just the travels and the lodging. My goal is to go up there, represent OEMR, represent the OpenEMR community, get this challenge going, and take copious amounts of notes, bring it back to Orlando, and maybe do something here in the local community of a similar nature. There's an opportunity, I think, to expand. He was saying that there's only like two medical hackathons going on in the country right now, one at Virginia Commonwealth and one at Hopkins. That's pretty understandable. So there's a spiel. I think it's a great opportunity. It seems to go right hand in hand with the mission of the board. And I think we just need to allocate some funds for the sponsorship, and hopefully the board is willing to send me up there. Again, I was hoping to have flights, prices, and hotels and everything ready for this meeting, and I have nothing because I have no internet. So I can't imagine a flight is super expensive, maybe $150, $200 up to Virginia and back. So that's the spiel. I can answer any questions if anybody has them. Okay. Brandon, I was supposed to be on the conference call tonight. Maybe he forgot, and I didn't get a chance to, you know, remind him. But he was going to be on board to answer any questions. So
this is great. I mean, I think it's a great idea. It's $1,250 for the bronze. So okay. I'm guessing it'd be like $2,000 with everything, you know. I mean, so he could always, I mean, if the board agrees, we could at least okay that so we can get you to, so we can actually send in the sponsorship and get you to actually, so you can get your flights and things like that. And obviously going a little over is not a big deal, but just so we have something to, that the board agrees to.
I said I'll do everything to keep the cost as minimal as possible. I don't need anything fancy, you know, just the cheapest flight there and back, and, you know.
Well, and make sure you're in a safe hotel.
Well, that was just the cheapest hotel that I feel safe in.
Does anybody not think this is a good way to spend money, or be we okay with doing this?
This is Lou. I'm okay with doing it. I think it's a great idea.
The treasurer, this is Stephen, was just about to speak before I was cut off by the wireless world. I just hear if you want to spend, as soon as you get the all the details figured out, pricing and stuff, if you just want to send that out and we can do a quick email, you know, around and make sure we have, just know the final figure. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be right around what you're saying, but, you know, just make it official. We could do that.
Okay. I mean, we know the exact sponsorship numbers. I had begun to research some flights and they were running in like the 180s, I think. So couple that with, two nights at a hotel. But I'll crunch some numbers, find some stuff, and give you, you know, a very close estimate. That's not a dead on number. But we can do that over the, I mean, I feel like maybe if we all just agree to just.
I think we can make a motion that says like, okay, for up to, you know, $2,000. I mean, and obviously, you know, it's just so that we all have an idea and we don't want to have it to be stop because of procedural issues, like what if there's not a quorum next month or something.
Yeah.
I mean, if we can just make a motion.
I'll make sure that, you know, I bring expense report, not expense reports, but, you know, receipts and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, you just send it to, sure you send it to me and Steven, and then we can,
yeah.
We, you know, just when you have it all planned out, you just send us what the, and also where we need to send the sponsorship information to, that kind of stuff. But yeah. If everyone agrees, we could make a motion and, you know, the motion would be sponsoring Robert to go to VCU Hackathon to participate for, up to approximately $2,000.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll second that motion, this is Steven.
Yeah, this is Lou. I'll second that.
And anybody against that? I guess we'll just make sure there's no nay. Okay, good. So there you go. You're going to the VCU Hackathon.
Yay! I'm sure it'll be a great opportunity for a press release and like a write-up and all that fun stuff. So I'll reach out to Brandon this week and get the ball rolling on the sponsorship. If you guys want to just, I'll email the board and kind of just feel out where we are and which particular device we want to go with. They're all, I think, very valuable. We don't have to decide now. I'll follow up via email with that.
Well, I mean, we can cut the check too if you want. If you just send me where I should send it, it'll be there within, I think, 5 days. If you're okay with a paper check.
I'll get the details from Brandon, and I'll probably just CC you on like the, hey, it's a go. Here's the treasurer. Give him tell him where to send the money.
Cool. All right, great. Thanks, Arlen.
Then we'll, next item, This is more of a nomination. So we have John Williams on as a guest, who's done a lot of, he's doing a lot of analysis sort of work and things like that with OPMR and ShinyR and all these other strategic stuff going on, especially with demo data that's standardized, things like that. I'll let him introduce himself, but he's interested in joining the board. So I figured we'd do a nomination today to basically vote in for next month. And it's also sort of, you know, also we thought it would make sense actually to have a volunteer staff position, kind of a more official position where he'd be the chief data scientist, since he is sort of doing a lot of that stuff already, and especially in terms of the standardized demo data, which will then open up the door to a whole bunch of other analysis engines that we can be doing. But John, are you still on?
Yes.
Thank you. Oh, so if you want, you can introduce yourself. I mean, don't feel too much pressure here. But...
Sure, John Williams. I'm a data scientist. I was actually involved with the project back in Meaningful Use One. I was involved with some of the original Meaningful Use One functions, and but then got away from it. Now I'm in a data science role, and there's just a whole lot of opportunity to add value to the organization, to the product. Through data science activities. You all may have noticed that 2017 seems to be the year of analytics in electronic health records. And so I project that there'll be significant opportunity or need or desire to add analytic features to OpenEMR. And to do that, you need data to be able to, you know, implement analytics features. You know, it's an issue with in medical records, you know, where do you get data? It's a challenge. So there's a need to simulate appropriate data for implementing analytic features, so testing them and showcasing them. So to me, this is very exciting, very interesting, and I hope to add value to the project in this manner. Anybody have any questions?
This is Robert. I know John, I've interacted with you quite a bit on the chat already, so I feel like I've got a bit of a relationship with you. Could you just forward somebody on the board your resume so we can just send it around to anybody that may want to take a look?
Sure, absolutely.
LinkedIn's fine.
Okay.
But like I said, I can speak for John, not for him, but I've worked. Had some conversations, and think be a good ad.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I think it's very timely because I agree. I mean, there's the data, you know, and you know, Matthew's been working on this stuff too, and also several other developers. You don't see them much in the forums, but definitely in the chat. There's a lot of stuff going on for the analytics, CTakes, and all these other I think potential. Analytic engines that are going to be basically running side by side with OpenEMR. And the first step is probably to have a huge amount of demo data to be able to analyze, which I know John's working on. And he even goes in nicely with FHIR also. And there's actually, you know, there's just this, I don't think I sent it to the board, but there's actually a paper that just came out where there's actually a software that's creating FHIR demo data by just making it up. I mean, just by, it's a simulation. It's just making up patients. So I think there's a lot of stuff going on that if we can plug into these things, there's a lot that OpenEMR can be used for. I mean, also, you know, definitely for clinical things, for analysis, but definitely also for education and research also.
Yeah, this is Lou. Can I ask a question of John?
Sure.
Yeah, you know, my organization, my company, we report quality measures, and so the data analytics is becoming bigger and bigger, and we found that the holy grail, at least up until now, and it's changing, has been the core of all the data has been the claims, you know, for that the doctors put in. But I've always found that there is this tremendous goldmine of data and that's available for free, from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, where, you know, hospital discharges and and patient safety and all those various things that are now being folded into the National Institute of Health. And I was curious, do you look at those are huge databases that are available to anybody. And I was wondering, do you look into that as well, or do you just look into the personal claims side, you know, on the level of the patient?
I am familiar with those HHS databases. In fact, one is called MEPS. It's, I forget what the acronym is, but it's a Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. It's a huge survey that's done every year. They're actually having a workshop on it next week that I'll be attending. And then there's another set of databases called Healthcare Utilization.
HCUPS, right? Yeah.
HCUP, right. Those cost money, and those are contributed to by each of the states. The MEPS database is free, so yeah, there is a good data from the federal government. And then there's the this program that actually Matthew turned me on to, which I'm actually working on now. Thank you, Matthew. It's on the National Ambulatory, if I can even come up with the name of it now, National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey. And so we're developing demo data from those federal government surveys. So to answer your question, yes, there is great data available from the federal government, and we are making use of it.
That's great. And just so you know, you may not know this, but you probably do know, if you're doing a pure research project, you could use CMS's data. You could use their data center and become a user of it, and it's free. And if you want me to look up that information, I'll get it for you. But there is actually a way to log into CMS and look at all the data they have through their data center. But you have to be purely researched to do that. So if you want, I'll try to get that information for you.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that. Thank you.
Okay.
So like many other industries, healthcare is just awash in data. And so I think it makes a lot of sense to try to leverage it.
Look into a project called the QECP, Qualified Entity, QECP Certified, I don't know what the P is for, but look into the QECP. I think you'll see a lot of good opportunity there.
I will, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, Brady, I know we have some extra stuff at the end of this meeting to get through. So I know we're pushing up against it's already 10 after 10. So if we can kind of just keep moving along and.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think we're pretty much. Yeah. Next item is public and community concerns, which we, unless someone has something to add, we'll move on to basically just announcing next board meeting, October 11th, 2017. And then we can adjourn the meeting. Unless there's any official business somebody wants to bring up before I stop recording here. So meeting is adjourned.